Trump is the idea that he wants too much power. He wants too much power in a lot of realms. For the president,
hi, I'm Rachel T.
Hi, I'm Eva.
Hi, I'm Rachel G.
We are all Girl Scouts, and this is WGXC ACRA.
What? What's that you say? Everything sounds different to your ear? Well, that's because you're listening to the Battlefield Earth program every Tuesday night at 9:30 to midnight, and you know midnight, that's the midnight hour. Tune in!
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
All Together Now listens for feedback from the public. Anyone who wants to leave a public comment can call 518-291-9492 and leave an audio message up to 3 minutes with any sort of opinion about something you heard on All Together Now. You can also send emails to info@wgxc.org with opinions about what you hear here.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network in sports.
You've tuned into All Together Now, WGXC's local news show for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region, Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. Today, we'll hear from Paul Winkler, the executive director of the New York Bicycle Coalition. He'll get us up to date on bike-related legislation in Albany and a few major bicycling events across the state. That interview from WGXC's partner station WOOCLP in Troy. Also, we'll hear an interview with New Lebanon town clerk Tistra Hotling about her primary election against attorney Don Boyajian in the 107th State Assembly District. That election is on September 13th. Tune in for the local news, weather, and more on All Together Now.
Channel connection and the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Acre, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Tuesday, August 21st, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. Trump tells Reuters he fears a perjury trap. Also on the Tuesday rundown, Iowa activists to protest in support of a nationwide prison strike and a solar project throwing shade on the Keystone XL pipeline.
First, our top story, Reuters reports President Donald Trump is worried that any statements under oath he provides to special counsel Robert Mueller could be used to bring perjury charges against him as part of the probe into Russia's electoral interference. In an interview with Reuters, Trump echoed the concerns of his top lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, who has warned that any sit-down with Mueller could be a perjury trap. Reuters adds the president expressed fears that investigators could compare his statements with that of others who have testified in the probe, such as former FBI Director James Comey, and any discrepancies could be used against him. Despite his concerns, Trump did not comment on whether he would ultimately agree to an interview with Mueller. Residents in Lake County, Illinois, are pushing to make sure the Foxconn development in Racine County won't result in additional flooding for downstream residents. Tramell Gomes explains.
Since the Wisconsin legislature waived environmental regulations for Foxconn, the Lake County Stormwater Management Commission approved its own engineering study to make sure its watershed improvement projects won't be harmed by runoff from the site. Stormwater Commission Executive Director Michael Warner says the study is needed so they can address potential watershed-wide flood impacts.
People don't want to have an increased flooding problem due to upstream impacts, so we are, that is the reason we're taking a close look at it, but we also are aware that there are benefits to this, to the project. You know, there's economic benefits.
Last week, the Lake County Commission approved $74,000 to fund the study. The Taiwanese electronics manufacturer received strong support from Governor Scott Walker and President Donald Trump to move to Wisconsin with promises to hire 13,000 workers.
The county's impact analysis consists of a multi-phase review to identify the magnitude of stormwater, floodplain, and wetland impacts and all mitigation methods proposed. Iowa activists will protest outside the Iowa Prison Industries office in Des Moines today, that in solidarity with a prison strike planned for at least 17 states. More from Ross Brown.
The prison strike is planned to run through September 9th, the date of the 1971 Attica prison uprising in New York that left 43 people dead. Patrick Stahl is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America Des Moines chapter and says local activists are calling on IPI to pay its incarcerated workers a prevailing wage.
Across the country, most prisoners won't make more than a dollar an hour for their labor. In Iowa, working inside a prisoner will make anywhere between 27 cents and 68 cents an hour. At a private corporation like Iowa Prison Industries, the wage is something like 58 cents to 87 cents an hour.
Organizers expect a significant number of inmates across the country to refuse to work, some to participate in hunger strikes and boycott purchases from prison stores in an effort to call attention to prison labor issues and inadequate prison conditions.
In 2016, a prison strike was organized in 12 states with 24,000 prisoners taking part. The latest prison protests are related to the South Carolina riot at Lee Correctional Institution earlier this year. That one left 7 people dead and injured an additional 17. The school day might look a little different for Kentucky kids this year as districts figure out how to function with fewer dollars.
Senior policy analyst with the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, Ashley Spalding, explains that for more than a decade, in order to make room for tax cuts, state legislators and the governor slashed funding for pre-K through 12 education. And when taking inflation into account, it's a 14% cut in total SEEK dollars per student between 2008 and 2019. As a result, she says, districts are facing difficult choices.
Kids might be in larger classes. They may not have the support services that they need. Some schools were having fewer instructional days, a lot of cuts to personnel, not enough money for textbooks, not enough money for repairs to buildings that can really affect kids' health.
SEEK is the core funding in Kentucky for pre-K through 12 education. Kentucky was ranked third worst among states last year in per-student cuts to core funding, and Spalding says the new state budget does not include a meaningful increase to SEEK funding for 2019. Mary Sherman reporting.
And finally, an alternative energy source is popping up on Nebraska land that would be crossed by the proposed Keystone XL pipeline. We get more from Eric Galatis.
Ranchers Bob and Nancy Allpress became the third Nebraska family to install solar panels on their land near Napier, which lies directly in the path of the proposed Keystone XL pipeline. Mark Heflinger with the group Bold Nebraska says a crowdfunding campaign is underway for more so-called solar XL installations in Nebraska and South Dakota, led by indigenous groups concerned about leaks and spills into waterways, among other environmental risks.
This is basically our putting a line in the sand here and saying we want to move towards renewable energy. So TransCanada, then, if they eventually decide to build this boondoggle of a project, we'll have to tear down clean renewable energy in order to build their tar sands pipeline.
The pipeline developer says its proposal to deliver tar sands to a refinery in Texas is safe and would provide economic benefits to local communities.
TransCanada says it's committed to move 500,000 barrels of crude oil per day through the pipeline, but has not yet determined whether or not the project is financially feasible. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for newsin' and cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we are online at publicnewsservice.org.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 30% chance of showers Tuesday, mainly after 5 p.m. Should be partly sunny until then with a high near 71. Low around 66 Tuesday night with a 90% chance of rain overnight. Possible thunderstorms at times after 1 a.m. Showers and thunderstorms continue before noon on Wednesday. Then it's mostly cloudy with a high near 73 and a low around 57. Thursday should be sunny with a high near 72 and a low around 55. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Listener-supported Creative Community Radio.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Weather Update. The National Weather Service in Albany is predicting a partly sunny afternoon with a temperature high at 78 degrees and a north wind at around 5 miles an hour becoming calm. For tonight, it will be mostly cloudy with a low around 59 degrees and a southeast wind at around 6 miles an hour. Forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Tuesday, a chance of showers mainly after 5 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a high near 74 degrees. Tuesday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, then showers and possibly thunderstorms after 8 p.m. The temperature low for Tuesday night will be 67 degrees. And on Wednesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a high near 79 degrees. Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 56. Sunrise today was at 6:07 a.m., and the sun will set at 7:48 p.m. That will give us 13 hours and 41 minutes of daylight, 2 minutes and 37 seconds less than yesterday. So there you have your WGXC Hands-On Radio weather update. For local news, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, wgxc.org.
There are extra web streams. Besides the 24-hour broadcast of WGXC, there are extra web streams at wgxc.org for you to listen to, including Tuesday, August 21st, the Hudson Common Council meeting. Dan Udell usually webcast those with the WGXC app. That's at 7 p.m. Tuesday, August 21st. Then Thursday, August 23rd, Bobby Previtt's Blueprints performance is at High Low in Catskill at 365 Main Street. WGXC webcasts all the shows at High Low in Catskill, including Bobby Previtt's Blueprints show. This Thursday night, August 23rd, it should start around 8:30 p.m. Friday night, we have another live webcast from High Low in Catskill, an extra web stream of Jeff Mercell performing. He's got a new solo record out, and he also plays with Mercury Rev. Tune in to the live webcast by clicking on the Listen Now button, wgxc.org, or any WGXC webpage, and scroll down to the bottom to find the High Low webcast a little after 8 p.m., Friday, August 24th, with Jeff Mercell. There's another extra web stream Saturday, August 25th, from High Low in Catskill. Stephen Carl and Handsome Animals and Darlin' Darlin' perform. Click on Listen Now at any WGXC webpage to find the web stream. Scroll down and you'll find the live web stream from High Low in Catskill, Saturday, August 25th. Call the WGXC feedback line anytime, 518-291-9492. If you have something to say about something you heard on WGXC, give us a call. Write it audio letter to the editor. Call in at 518-291-9492. Leave a 3-minute message and we'll play it back on All Together Now. That's 518-291-9492. To leave an audio letter to the editor at 518-291-9492. WGXC at 518-291-9492.
WGXC needs you. Can you be entertaining and engaging while being informative? Are you interested in all things local? News, politics, and culture? Well, WGXC 90.7 FM is looking for people to host its morning shows, the hands-on community radio magazine show. Our hosts love having an audience, are capable of multitasking, and are slow to panic. No radio experience is necessary. We're looking for diamonds in...
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
It's summer and bicycles should be everywhere. Earlier today, my co-host got an update about bicycling issues in the Capital Region across the state.
So I'm in the studio right now with Paul Winkeller, Executive Director of the New York Bicycling Coalition. Welcome, Paul.
Hey, good to see you again.
Nice to see you. Last time you were in here was a couple months ago, and we talked about all things bicycles. And there's a lot that's happened this summer, and there's a lot of stuff coming up. So maybe take a stab at one of those things and
all right.
Start there.
It's incredibly busy and really exciting. The next thing up is August 24th to 26th, where we have a three-day pilot called NYBC at the New York State Fair. And we are going to be building a pop-up cycle track, which is a two-way bike lane, and we're going to have our two tents, and we're going to have a big sign that says free bike rides, and the 80,000 people that walk by our tents a day are going to think, who are those crazy people with bikes?
And aren't all bike rides free?
Well, actually, the hook is that most of the rides at the State Fair cost money, so we're free because... that's what we're all about.
Let's just put that into context. So the New York State Fair, it's the oldest in America.
It is.
You get about 80,000 people per day up.
Per
right?
day.
And
yep.
It's not your usual crowd, is it?
No. We actually asked the state fair organizers for their demographics. They do survey. And this is very much a middle American type crowd. A lot of rural folks, perhaps not as many as we would like ride bikes, but again, we're going to have a full range of bikes. We're actually going to have some electric bikes. We're going to have road bikes, hybrids, mountain bikes, hopefully some kid bikes. We are actively seeking volunteers. This is a gig that came up as kind of a throwaway line in an email to the governor's office. I said, can we get some free space at the state fair? And they said, yep. And we're really doing this on a shoestring. In fact, I really didn't budget for this, and everything costs money. So we're getting volunteers from Ithaca, Rochester, maybe locally here. We're trying to cob together some bicycles. We are doing a lot of printing. We're going to have posters. We have tents festooned with names of community bike shops, like the one in Troy, as well as bike organizations. And it's going to be cool.
Great. And sticking with events, so that's just coming up, obviously, this weekend.
Yeah,
And that's in Syracuse?
It's in Syracuse. That's where the state fair is. It's a huge, I think it's 2.5 million people over a couple of weeks. It's a big event, and they just built some gigantic new center. It's kind of unbelievably huge, and it's really, we're taking a chance. We'll see what happens. Hopefully people get turned on to biking.
Yeah, it sounds promising to me.
Yeah.
So then we have the 2018 New York State Bike Summit.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal coming up in Saratoga Springs on September 27th to 29th.
Yes, we had our inaugural summit last year in Albany, covered by you.
Yep.
And which was great. We had over 200 people. This is an inaugural state summit. We had about 225 people, as I said, about 15 panels. A pretty big big tent event where we have everyday cyclists, community bike shop people, on-road, off-road, e-bikes, the whole span of the bike community, plus bureaucrats, planners, engineers, bike industry. We're repeating that this year, although with a twist. We've moved to Saratoga Spa National Park. One of our main hosts, in addition to New York State DOT, is the Saratoga Greenbelt. They want a chance to show off their work doing some trail building and trail planning in and around Saratoga. It's a 3 days this year. The main event is the 28th of September, where we'll have about 20 sessions. We expect well over 300 people. We dropped the registration dramatically because we've been fortunate to raise some money, and we want to get community bike shop people and everyday cyclists there. We do have scholarships if you can't afford it. And the day before, we're doing something really cool, which is we got a grant from the state government, and there are seven state agencies sponsoring this summit, so New York State is totally bought into biking, which we like. We are going to be having a complete streets training for local public officials, and what that is in a nutshell is we're going to provide training for local planners, zoning board officials to use their local codes to create more opportunities for people to walk and bike safely. The public wants it. We want to train local officials to use their legislation and their laws to provide those opportunities to get people out of cars and walking and biking. That's the day before. The day after, another twist is we're going to do some bike riding. We're going to have a on-road ride from Saratoga Spa Park down to the battlefield. That day, the 29th of September, is also National Bike Your Park Day. There's hundreds of events around the country. And we're going to have our own Bike Your Park. And then we're going to do some mountain biking with the Saratoga Mountain Bike Assemba, as our Saratoga Mountain Bike Association. So on and off-road riding, there'll be some bikes and beer events, of course, because they go together.
Especially in
although
Wisconsin.
we not too much drinking and biking, but after. And so, again, big deal. Really, I think we at this point have institutionalized the State Bike Summit. Our organization actually exploded after the first summit. And, you know, we may move it around the state. I don't really know. We'll have to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, come on up.
I think that sounds like a great idea to move it around the state.
I think so.
So getting back to the one of the things that you mentioned in that context, the complete streets training.
Yeah.
I mean, I recall from a couple months ago when you were in your here, there were some kind of battles about some of the bike paths and fencing and safety and
Yeah, there was an issue in Schenectady, as I recall, which has been resolved. There was some concern about a new bike path behind the casino having a dramatic drop off into the Mohawk. The county, I don't know who put together the funding, either the county or the city, but that actually, last I heard, has been mitigated.
Mm-hmm.
One of our roles is to try to provide to shine a light on both the good things happening, but also to be a vehicle for local and regional folks to coalesce around so that we can solve problems relating to pass legislation, law enforcement behavior, providing good dialogue between advocates and everyday cyclists and governmental entities. We try to solve problems, and the idea is we need to get every New Yorker on a bicycle for a million different reasons.
For what it's worth, in terms of complete streets training, I'm still curious to see whether that could happen in Troy on a more widespread basis, because I still see people biking the wrong way.
Yeah, it's called salmoning.
Oh, is that? Oh, it has a name.
It is called salmoning. Yeah, salmoning.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, in a bad way. But
it,
yes.
It's really a problem in New York City, where a lot of the delivery community, which are under the gun to do their deliveries, they have these throttle electric bikes, and they are often, you know, whatever the shortest way is to get their delivery done. But complete streets, I mean, you can build complete streets. I know Troy is doing that to provide accommodations and to make a safer, what's called a multimodal road environment. But you can build the streets, but you also have to provide, we and others have to provide the education so cyclists know how to be part of that system in a way that's safe for them and safe for cars. And we have to train law enforcement. We actually have some really cool video on our website with the Albany Police Department, where the Albany Police run through an example in the field of every law in the state having to do with bicyclists. And we are trying to get that around to law enforcement, because law enforcement tends to not spend much time when they get trained in their academies on those portion of the vehicular and traffic laws, and we want law enforcement to default to education and collaboration as opposed to being punitive when they see a badly behaving bicyclist.
Yep.
That's a challenge. So, yeah, you can build it and they'll come, but they may go backwards.
So this might be a good place to talk about some of the issues. I have three of them listed here, and not necessarily in the order that I want to talk about them, but this one segues right into the 3-foot safe passing.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that.
So sadly, our state is ranked 28th bike-friendly state in America by the League of American Bicyclists, and one of the reasons our ranking is not higher, even though there's some pretty cool things happening, like the Empire State Trail and the new Cuomo Bridge, and a lot of funding from the state going into complete streets, is that we don't have a defined safe passing law. What that means is 30 states have it. And what that means is that you're supposed to be a 3-foot safe passing means that a motorist is supposed to provide 3 feet, and they can be ticketed for that. And because we don't have defined safe passing, there's no standard. No one really knows what they're supposed to do. Law enforcement can't do anything. It's the number one issue when we survey bicyclists. They want defined safe passing. We cannot, sadly, and I have to spend an hour about this to tell you why, and I don't even understand why, really, we cannot get that bill out of the Assembly Transportation Committee. We've tried for 4 years.
Are there particular personalities that you know of?
Yes, there are.
And can you talk about that?
The chair of the Assembly Transportation Commissioner, Mr. David Gant from Rochester, has issues around safe passing, and he will not allow the bill to proceed out of his committee for a vote.
That's interesting.
We have really appealed to him in every possible way, and again, it's up to us to educate him. We feel like if it got out of the committee, it would become law in no time, and that would make New York a more bike-friendly place. So we're going to keep working it politely, but we'll see. We are always optimistic. We're bicyclists.
Yep. So we got just about 2 minutes, a little bit less than 2 minutes left. Let's talk about the other two things, which are connected in a certain way. One is the e-mountain bike issue, and then the other one is the attempt to legalize Class 1
pedal assists. Yeah. So they're sort of related. On the former, the bike industry defines three classes of e-bikes, electric bikes. These are bikes with batteries, not engines. Class 1, which is now legal in New York City, is a pedal assist electric bicycle with a battery. It means you've got to pedal to get an assist, and you have to ask for the assist. So that provides about 3/4 of the exercise benefit. Mayor de Blasio actually issued a rule this summer making those legal, and the industry is thrilled. And, of course, they're already being sold in New York around the state. I'm sure you've seen them here in Troy. New York State has not caught up to that standard yet. Our bill's pending, and we have passed different versions or almost passed in both chambers in New York. We just have to get them together. There are issues, again, in the Assembly Transportation Committee that have kind of slowed this down. Mr. Gant wants a Class 1 bill that requires helmets and has an age restriction, and we can't support that, and our community can't support that. So, again, we'll just keep working it till we pass that. States are passing these laws. We'd like pedal assist because it gets more people on bikes. It's an incredible option in bike share, which is the biggest part of the bike movement now. And
all right. Thank you very much for coming
sure.
in.
Sure. Come to the bike.
Imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together. If I should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you belong to me and ease my mind, imagine how the world would be so very fine. So happy together. I can see me loving nobody but you for all my life. When you're with me, maybe the skies will be.
Hi, this is Sharon Jones of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, and you're tuned to WGXC 90.7 FM Accra.
Fridays on WGXC are made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Matt Tombers of Claverick, New York. Sustaining supporters like Matt are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Scribner's Catskill Lodge, a 38-room boutique hotel located in Hunter, offering a seasonal outdoor pool, weekend wellness programming, and nightly s'mores around the fire pits. Located at 13 Scribner Hollow Road, across the street from Hunter Mountain, 8 miles from the Forest Trails in Catskill Park, and 22 miles from the town of Woodstock. Scribner's is also home to the Prospect Restaurant and Bar, serving modern fare. Information at 518-628-5130 or at www.scribnerslodge.com.
Oh, honey, I'm so glad you brought me up to Hudson, New York, so we could gamble about with the Finches and the Sparrow families.
Yeah, honey, I love coming up here on the weekends. You know, Sunday, September 16th, over there at Basilica Hudson, they're having one of them record fairs.
Oh, I can finally get my Pete Townsend cassette.
Yeah, I'm going to get my Bette Midler bootlegs, probably, Sunday, September 16th at that Basilica Hudson.
Oh, is that that place with all the lovely people and sculptures and Greenway?
Yeah, they got a Greenway down there. I like to sit on it and stare at the frogs gathering around my feet.
Oh, September 16th at Basilica Hudson, the WGXC Record Fair.
Next, we have these reports.
We have Tistra Haltling. I'm probably pronouncing your name incorrectly.
Pretty close, Tom. It's Tistria Haltling.
Tistria Haltling. Did I get it right that time?
You did. Oh, perfect.
I think maybe there was a... you've got a difficult to pronounce election there with you and your Democratic candidate. Don,
how do you
say his name? Don...
Boyajian.
Boyajian, and then whichever one of you wins will take a go up against Jake Ashby, who is easy to pronounce. And this is the 107th Assembly District that was long held by Steve McLaughlin, one of the closest things to Donald Trump in New York that hasn't been arrested by the FBI. I guess we say yet. But... So you've got a
whole kinds of difficult hurdles ahead of you. You got an election on a Thursday because I guess Andrew Cuomo wanted to make it easier for him to run against a Democratic primary opponent. And and you've got to beat a Democrat, and then you've got to beat a Republican that in a seat that has been Republican for how many years?
Over 20.
Over 20 years. So how are you going to do all that?
Well, Tom, I'm coming with a message that I think really resonates with people. People in my district feel underrepresented by their government currently, and like their voices aren't being heard. And so as the town clerk in the town of New Lebanon, I've seen firsthand how our small rural communities are really not being heard on a state level. We're not getting the funding that we deserve. We're not getting the programs that we deserve. And so I'm a Democrat, a proud Democrat, but I also reach across party lines. I won in New Lebanon by a 13% margin in a community that is, you know, a red community similar to the district that I'm running in. And Jake Ashby won by under 200 votes in April, so it is a winnable race. And
this year, at least, right? This is the best chance to flip that district this year because of the Democrat enthusiasm.
It is. It is. And I'm also, the things that I'm speaking to, like our infrastructure and our opioid crisis, these are things that are not a Democratic issue. These are things that are widespread across our district. And so I think that my message really resonates with people across all party lines.
And ethics reform, I see, is one of the four issues on your webpage that you're interested in. How are you going to get ethics reform through a legislature that has had both of its leaders from both parties convicted on corruption charges in recent years, and a executive branch that is also had several court cases on corruption issues, and absolutely nothing got done on ethics this past year in the legislature? Nothing, even though the governor said in his State of the State that he was going to focus on that, and even though individual legislators say they're going to focus on that, nothing was done. How are you going to get some ethics reform in Albany?
That's a great question, Tom. So as you know, we have one of the most corrupt state governments in the country. And, you know, taking away the pension of people that have been found guilty of committing a crime is certainly a great first step. But I'd like to take it a step further. I'd like to say that our elected officials are held to a higher standard than the people that elect them. And if you're found guilty while in your capacity as an elected official, you don't get to be an elected official anymore. You've broken that trust. And when you talk about passing that through and you're talking about affecting the people who are in these elected positions, I think the best way you do that is by going to the people, having real openness and transparency in our government, because these are our tax dollars. So when you're open and transparent and you bring light into what's going on, you know, people get involved. And when you tell your elected officials, if you don't take these steps for real ethics reform, we're going to find someone else to take your job, I found that to be the most effective mechanism to evoke change, is to go to the people and really bring openness and transparency and kind of shine a light on everything that's going on, you know, to get people involved and to say, if you're not representing me the way that I want to be represented, we're going to elect someone else into that position. And we've seen it, you know, with the young people in our nation. A lot of them are going to be voting pretty soon, and they've made a very clear message that, you know, if we're not safe in our schools, if you're not representing what we want as a country, then when we all vote, we're going to come together and we're going to vote you out. And so I think going to the people with things like ethics reform and really bringing a knowledge to people of what's really going on, I think that that's the best route there.
And you mentioned the opioid addiction problem before. I think our listeners probably know a lot about what Chatham is doing about that and what problems there are in Chatham. Can you tell us a little bit what the situation is in New Lebanon and what you'd like to do about it?
Sure. So before I was the town clerk, I was the court clerk for 6 years, and I saw firsthand that what we're doing right now is not working. We would have people come in that were struggling with opioid addiction, and they would say, I need help. And that's really the only time that treatment's going to be successful, is when the person comes forward and says, I need help. And way too many times we told them there's no bed available for you. And the program that you mentioned that Peter Volkman is running in Chatham actually treats the addiction, and it treats it as a health emergency as opposed to a criminal issue. And when you can provide treatment to the people that need treatment, you're going to be successful. I have multiple friends that have lost brothers in the last year because they've gone to jail, and while they were in jail, they did not receive any treatment services, any treatment programs, and they got out and they used right away, and they used at the rate that they had used at when they went in, and their bodies didn't have the same tolerance, and they died that very first time using it. So I know that we can do better. So as a state assemblywoman, I'm going to push for more funding, and I'm going to push for more treatment centers and programs where people can really receive help when they want help. And I think what Peter's done in Chatham is brilliant. It's worked very successfully. There are some towns in Massachusetts that have also done a similar treating the addiction with treatment programs. And I think that's the only way that you're going to have an impact on the crisis that we're facing right now as a nation.
You're trailing your opponent in fundraising overall. I guess you did better recently, but he's amassed a big war chest, I guess, because he's an Armenian, and there's an Armenian community in the district. Can you comment on that and what you're doing to raise money?
Sure. So one clarification that I think is really important is that in this race for the New York State Assembly, I am actually the top income or the top money raiser. He was raising money for a completely different race. He was running a congressional race, and he raised money for about a year.
He was going to run against Elise Stefanik before, right?
Exactly. He was running for CD21 in a primary up there. About a month before that primary, he quit that race and jumped into this race, and he brought with him about $150,000. So when it comes to the actual assembly race, he has not raised very much money. I have outraised him by quite a margin. But when it comes to actual money, you know, ready to use, he certainly has more. But I do want to point out that in that congressional race, he was the top money earner, and yet he pulled towards the bottom. And Tedra Cobb, who won that race, didn't have nearly as much money as he did. And it just shows you that money doesn't buy you votes. People want a candidate that relates to them, that reaches them, that talks to them about the issues, and I'm that candidate.
And you'll probably be going up against a well-funded Republican candidate in the fall if you win. Are you worried about that? Are you getting lots of support from the state Democratic institutions?
Yeah, so the interesting thing is that Jake Ashby, as of the July filing, had only raised $10,000, and I had raised close to $25,000. So I am also way ahead of my Republican opponent when it comes to fundraising. When I win the primary on September 13th, I think that's when organizations like DAC, the Democratic Assembly Campaign Committee, a lot of the unions that are staying out of it while there's a primary, but after there's a winner of the primary, will come in. So there's going to be a lot of money that comes in there. And I'm still actively fundraising, so I'm raising thousands of dollars each and every week from a lot of small donations coming in. A lot of people are really excited about me and are doing regular donations through Act Blue. And that's adding up. So, you know, I'm not concerned about fundraising, although I'm always open to anybody that wants to donate to bring in more fundraising. But as of right now, I have more money than my Republican opponent.
And we've just got 2 minutes left. Can you just give a quick pitch to voters about why they should turn out for you on Thursday, September 13th?
Sure. Thanks so much for your time, Tom. So I'm the candidate that is a working class mother of three. My husband's a diesel mechanic. I was born and raised in New Lebanon. I know firsthand the needs of the small rural communities. And I am going to be a fighter for all of us, the regular people of the district. I feel like when we don't have all the perspectives in our government, when we only have perspectives of rich white males, it gives us a very limited view. And we need all different socioeconomic backgrounds, we need all different genders, we need all different races to ensure that the perspective that we're bringing to the table is as varied as the people that we represent. And so I'm going to fight for things like, you know, ethics reform, our roads and infrastructure, getting us the funding we deserve, the opioid crisis. And I'm going to fight for these things knowing what it's like to go back to work when my babies are 6 weeks old because we financially can't afford not to. And I know what it's like to have a health insurance plan that's $1,800 a month, yet still pay high deductibles and high co-pays every time we go to use our insurance. And I know what it's like to have a mom that pretty soon is going to have to decide whether to live with me or live in a nursing home, not because she medically needs to, but because she can't afford to to live on her income once she's retired. These are very real needs of our district, and I've walked in the shoes of so many of you, and I know what it's like to fight these fights day in and day out. And I feel that we pay a lot of money in taxes, and that money is supposed to be coming back to us for programs that support the people in our communities, and we can do better than we're doing right now. And so I'm going to be a tough advocate for all of you. I'm going to go to every town in my community and talk about what the needs are, how the state's doing, how we can do better, really open up the communication and the transparency. And
all together now, the 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday newscast for Greene and Columbia counties is looking for contributors. If you have an idea for a regular or irregular segment, or if you want to interview the public at a local... From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Lorna Chirot Littleway reports in the Columbia paper on the August 14th meeting of the Hillsdale Town Board. During that meeting, Supervisor Peter Chipkowski decried the lack of transparency around the recent appointment of Carmen Martino, a Republican and former state trooper, as the interim replacement for Dr. Andrea Coleman as county coroner. Coleman, a Democrat, abruptly resigned in July after serving for less than 8 months on the job. Chipkowski said there was a lack of transparency on the county board of supervisors' part in naming Coleman's successor. He noted another candidate, Democrat Bernadette Powers, has a medical background and 35 years of experience as a registered nurse, family nurse practitioner, and psychiatric nurse practitioner. Columbia County voters will have the opportunity to choose a new coroner in November. Powers has announced her intention to run. Chipkowski also announced the county sheriff's office intends to crack down on speeders passing through Hillsdale along Routes 22 and 23. The supervisor said the town should consider adding radar speed warning signs, although they cannot be posted on the intersecting routes. Board members and Highway Superintendent Richard Briggs identified Michael Hunt, West End, and Oxbow Roads as additional locations where speeding drivers are a problem. Hillsdale Assessor Pam Cook updated the board on the property revaluation project. The new valuations take effect September 2019. The last Hillsdale property revaluation was a decade or more ago. The Hillsdale Town Board will hold its next meeting and budget workshop 7 p.m. on Tuesday, September 11th. Read the full story in the Columbia paper. David Lombardo is reporting for Capital Confidential. The New York Times editorial board has endorsed Zephyr Teachout in the Democratic primary for Attorney General. In an opinion piece published late August 19th, the paper declared Teachout the best candidate in the crowded primary field. The other nominees are New York City public advocate Latia James, U.S. Representative Sean Patrick Maloney, and attorney Lacia Eve. The endorsement noted Teachout's work on the Emoluments Clause against President Donald J. Trump, but argued her focus on the president would not distract her from working on issues like tenants' rights and criminal justice reforms. The editorial board anticipates she will also recruit some of the best lawyers in the country to work in her office. The endorsement reads, and I quote, "New York needs a great lawyer. We believe that Democrats who are seeking a means of standing up to the Trump presidency and graft in Albany can find in Ms. Teachout their most effective champion for democracy and civil rights, good government and the environment, workers' rights, fair housing, and gender equality. Read the full story at Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. Daily Freeman is reporting the not-for-profit environmental organization Scenic Hudson has added two new members to its board of directors. Dr. Siebel Fishman of Brooklyn and Rhinebeck is a dermatologist with a practice in New York City. She enjoys hiking in the surrounding Hudson Valley. Judah S. Kashar of Chappaqua and Clinton Corners is a managing partner of Roaring Brook Capital, an equity fund established in 2006. Kashar owns a farm in Millbrook and is interested in regenerative farming, locally sourced food, and social entrepreneurship. Scenic Hudson President Ned Sullivan said Fishman and Kashar will serve Scenic Hudson well. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXE Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXE website, wgxe.org.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 30% chance of showers Tuesday, mainly after 5 p.m. Should be partly sunny until then with a high near 71. Low around 66 Tuesday night with a 90% chance of rain overnight. Possible thunderstorms at times after 1 a.m. Showers and thunderstorms continue before noon on Wednesday. Then it's mostly cloudy with a high near 73 and a low around 57. Thursday should be sunny with a high near 72 and a low around 55. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre at Catskill, Hudson. Listener-supported Creative Community Radio. Here are some more headlines from WOOCLP, WGXC's partner station in Troy.
The Times Union reports that a state appellate court has affirmed a judgment that will force Rensselaer County to pay a former female jail sergeant approximately $2.6 million for lost wages and suffering after she was forced to quit her job as a result of severe sexual harassment by a group of male officers known as the, quote, Boys Club. The recent ruling marks the second appellate defeat for Albany County.
After Todd Ho left his position as one of Governor Cuomo's top aides, he was able to push multi-million dollar construction deals in favor of his clients and arrange meetings at Governor Cuomo's taxpayer-paid-for mansion just months before a federal investigation was launched to look into several of Governor Cuomo's previous aides. Cuomo, who is seeking a third term this fall, has already seen two former aides convicted on corruption charges.
A much-litigated dispute about on what circumstances paddlers have the right to canoe or kayak on streams surrounded by private land is headed to trial on Monday in Fulton County. The defendants in 2009 paddled on a section of Shingle Shanty Brook, which he contends is navigable, which would mean by law the public can use it. The owners of the property contend the stream has no history of navigable use and their private property rights were violated. The state and lower courts have sided with the paddler, but the state's highest court sent it back to the lower court to be determined if the brook is actually navigable.
The New York Times endorsed Zafir Teachout for attorney general, citing her as an independent-minded lawyer, unusually well-prepared to curb abuses of power and restore integrity and pride to this office. She's known as a thoughtful and innovative scholar who has been pioneering thinker in the legal case against Trump's entanglements with foreign favor seekers. The Times said that she will work to secure tenants' rights and voting rights and pursue criminal justice reform.
Next, we have these reports.
Here's today's congressional campaign update with news about Representative John Faso, Republican from Kinderhook, his Democratic opponent Antonio Delgado, the rest of the campaign for the New York's 19th Congressional District.
Conservation Voters Education Fund is reporting the major party candidates in the 19th Congressional District race will face off in a forum focused on environmental issues August 29th. First-term Congressman John Faso, a Republican from Kinderhook, and challenger Antonio Delgado, a Democrat from Rhinebeck, will participate in the event sponsored by the League, the Friends of the Upper Delaware River, the Coalition for the Delaware River Watershed, and the Delaware Highlands Conservancy. The forum will focus on efforts at the federal, local, and state levels to protect the Delaware River watershed. According to the League, the watershed provides drinking water to 15 million people and is responsible for 600,000 jobs and $22 billion in annual economic activity. The event will be held in the Western Hotel's Grand Ballroom in Calicoon, 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 29th.
Coming up on the WGXC 90.7 FM community program schedule for Tuesday, August 21st, Pete Levensee starts the day in Catskill with the WGXC morning show from 9 to 11 a.m. In the second hour, he'll be talking with Hudson Valley historian Sylvia Hassenkopf and her granddaughter Eva Stock to discuss the importance of teaching children history. James White is back at 11 with the Music Maestro Hour, followed by Music for the Masses with Neva Wartell after the noon news headlines until 2 o'clock. Later on in the evening at 7 o'clock, Lillian Hornhorse, hosted by Lily Konigsberg and Matthew Norman, followed by Battlefield Earth with Dan Seward from 9:30 to midnight.
Tune in overnight, Wednesday, August 22nd, for experimental music overnight, transmission art, after the news at midnight. The Vital Weekly experimental music show is at 1 a.m., and the Watt from Pedro show with Mike Watt from the Minutemen and Firehose is on at 2 a.m. to 5 a.m., overnight on Waveform Standing Wave Radio and WGXC. There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events. Durham has a town board meeting Tuesday, August 21st at 7:30 p.m. Thursday, August 23rd, the Greenport Conservation Area has a tour with the Hudson Area Library's Sounds of Summer Summer Reading Program. Thursday night, Bobby Previtt's Blueprints is at High Low in Catskill. Hudson Valley composer Bobby Previtt leads a conceptual performance. Turn out to High Low or tune in the live web stream at 8:30 p.m. Usually things get started with Bobby Previtt's Blueprints at High Low. This week, Thursday, August 23rd. Catskill Farmers Market is back at the Jetsam's Landing in Catskill Friday, August 24th from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. The Bang Group performs at PS21 in Chatham Friday, August 24th. The Andy Cooney Band is back at Gavin's Irish Country Inn in East Durham Friday, August 24th. Jeff Mercell, who plays with Mercury Rev, performs at High Low in Catskill Friday, August 24th at 8 p.m. Should be a live web stream of that event at WGXC.org. There's an Exploring Geology hike Saturday, August 25th at the Edmund Nile Hayek Preserve in Rensselaerville. Study the rocks in the Rensselaerville record for a time before dinosaurs with Dr. Charles Ver Stratton of the New York State Museum. It's a semi-rugged walk, so bring some sturdy footwear on your feet. At the Hayek Preserve Visitor Centers, meet there at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 25th. Artist Walk with Sarah Butler, Saturday, August 25th at noon at the OMI International Arts Center in Ghent. There's a natural dye study at Drop Forge and Tool Saturday, August 25th from 1 to 4 p.m. with Ali Smith leading the open level workshop. Art OMI's music concert is at the Field Sculpture Park at OMI from 5 to 7 p.m. Saturday, August 25th. The Bang Group is back at PS21 in Chatham Saturday, August 25th at 8 p.m. The Perspectives Ensemble performs at 8 p.m. Saturday, August 25th at the Doctoro Center for the Arts in Hunter.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Acra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a rogue.